TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, indeed. It's another edition of Raised by Wolves. Welcome, Manny Hill and Dane Moore here with you on a Thursday. And Dane, I wonder if it's good or not that we've gotten a few days. Yeah, a few days to sort of like process this week as a whole. And certainly we'll get into the Kobe Bryant stuff later on in the program here. But Monday night against the Sacramento Kings, man, I just seeing the numbers after the game that ESPN Stats and Info put out, it was like teams, I forget exactly what it was because I don't have it in front of me.
It was a team that was down by 17 with 3 minutes left in a game was 8,378.
Yeah.
So the Wolves, now it's 8,378-1.
Yes.
Because they did blow the lead. I mean, and it was, I've been covering this team for a while now. And, you know, it's the Timberwolves who have struggled. I haven't ever seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And it was just, and I know maybe we'll talk about Kobe later, but it stunk, man. Just from like a whole vibe standpoint of the whole night, it just was, I just wish it would happen on a different night. You know, like if it had to happen, because it, you know, it just stinks to have to go in the locker room after the game and talk to those guys about an epic blown loss on a day where they're just, I mean, they are all exhausted from, you know, their whole own experience of losing Kobe and everything there. And it just, I mean, it was just a terrible, terrible loss for a team who'd already lost 9 in a row after losing 11 in a row earlier in the year. I mean, they really needed a win.
Yeah, and I think the frustrating part for me watching that sort of play out is that, I mean, listen, if they're going up against the Golden State Warriors, if it's the Warriors that we've known for the last 5 years, right? Forget about this year's Warriors, obviously. But if it's Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and you blow that lead, it's still bad.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to give them an out.
Particularly if you take the starters out.
Right. It's still bad. But I just feel like the feeling of that is a little bit different because it's like, okay, well, if there is a team that's going to do that to you, it's Golden State. This was against the Sacramento Kings.
At home, too. I think that's important.
Against a team that, if there has been a team that's been a bigger dumpster fire in the last 10 years in the NBA, it's the Sacramento Kings.
You know, I think we're hitting a point just where it's getting pretty dangerous. I think, you know, the relationship between what the Timberwolves are putting on the floor and the fan base, and it stinks. I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't, you know, exactly where you stand on your belief of like the long-term vision of this team, but I think in many ways it makes sense to be putting together a blueprint for success in the future.
Sure.
But it's that blueprint is actively costing this team the opportunity to win night after night. They play a style of play that, given the lack of talent they have, is extraordinarily volatile. And we saw that in that game where, I mean, they set a franchise record for three-point makes.
Right. That's what gets lost in this whole thing.
But that's what I'm talking about. The volatility of it is you're all the way up. Offensively, you're all the way up or you're all the way down. Because when you're shooting that many three-pointers in that style of play, when you're not really getting offense any other way, it's all or nothing. And it allows you high highs and really low lows. And you know what I was thinking about after that game was the Houston Rockets in the playoffs against the Golden State Warriors.
And they missed 27 in a row.
Right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's the Wolves and the Kings, so it's very different. But it's, you know, existentially, it's kind of the same thing. It's this construct of a very volatile system. And with the Wolves having so much less talent than that Rockets team does, it's even more so that way. And there's fewer highs and more lows. And it's why they're 15-32. I mean, straight up, that's what it is. Like, this team is on pace to win 26 games. Last year was a dumpster fire, and they won 36.
Yep.
And then, I mean, we're talking about almost half as many games as they won when they were the A seed with Jimmy Butler. That, even if you believe in the vision, starts to really, you know, clash with you got to have a little bit of immediate success.
Yeah.
To keep a fan base that we know, uniquely know, is way on the rocks with this team as is. So it's just, I don't know, man. It's just shaping up to be a dangerous sort of concoction, I feel at least.
Yeah, and I think just the overall disappointing part of it, I mean, Monday night aside, like, you feel like, okay, the Tibbs era kind of was what it was, and they made the playoffs, and that was cool for a hot tick and everything, and then things soured very quickly with the Butler stuff, and then Tibbs obviously gets fired, and when I remember when Tibbs was let go, there was sort of this feeling like, okay, now things are going to sort of trend upward. It may not look like it in terms of just like how many games they win and everything, but you're going to have this feeling of like things are going to go upward because big, bad, toxic Tibbs is now out of the building.
I mean, but that was probably wrong, right? I mean, like, in the big picture, it was probably going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of the situation was, is it was probably going to go down before it went back up.
Sure.
Because, I mean, I don't think the style of play Tibbs was trying to implement was going to ever have meaningful success here.
Right. There was always going to be a ceiling on that.
There was going to be a ceiling on that.
Yep.
That said, there was a level of competence to it that, I mean, lost in the mix of all the Jimmy stuff is that, you know, after that trade, they're playing pretty competent basketball. And the one thing, you know, for Tom's many pitfalls is he pushed for winning every single night. And I'm not saying that, like, Ryan isn't doing that, but the system Tibbs would put out, the game plan every night was maximizing this the roster, period. Ryan wants to win every single game, but when you're running a five-out scheme defensively or offensively and what they're doing defensively, it does not fit the personnel. So, I don't know, you call it they're operating at 90% of their functionality, 80% of what their potential is, and that is a big contrast to Tibbs.
Right.
So now we're talking about this dip, and the dip has, I think, been lower than I thought. I thought, like, well, I'm into this style. Like, Cat can shoot it. If we get him shooting 10 threes a game, like, look out. This team is a top 10, 5 offense in the league. I just thought, no matter what, you have that. But what I underestimated was that other guy's got to shoot threes.
Yeah.
If you're shooting 45 and Cat's shooting 10, you still got 35 other threes
ones,
to take,
yeah.
You know? And they're making, the others are making them at like a 30% clip, and that's bad.
Yeah.
Like, really bad.
Yeah, and I wonder with the style of play, and I know that they have preached, since Gerson got here, they have preached system over personnel, and we've talked about that for weeks on end since the season started. But I just wonder if that is putting sort of a cap on the type of players that they can go and get, if it's limiting them. And because I understand the idea of wanting to be, you know, a strong three-point shooting team, but if you're trying to build a roster,
right?
You know, a lot of teams want three-point shooters, and you're not going to be able to just
pluck
those
the
away
only thing.
From teams.
I don't think that's the only thing they crave.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's the most glaring. You know, you look at the box score and you see the three-point total. But there's a lot of things to the quote-unquote system. And that can be, you know, players, I mean, they don't just want threes.
Right.
They want to get to the free throw line, which they actually do well. They get to the free throw line well, and they have a few players who can get all the way to the rim. And that's the progression, right?
Yep.
Best thing you can do is take free throws. Best thing you can do is take shots within the restricted area. After that, it's corner threes. And then after that, it's above the break threes. The Wolves, they can get players who are strong slashers and cutters and able to, like, draw fouls and get to the line. So, in theory, I think what we will end up seeing, whether it's at the trade deadline on Thursday or this summer, is there might be personnel acquired that is not just a whole bunch of Allen Crabs,
right,
where they can shoot threes and that's it. Like, there are other ways to make this offensively better without it just being a straight 3-point. They need shooters. Don't get me wrong. They need shooters, but there's other things. They also need defenders.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just...
just as glaring a problem.
I question, given the personnel, I question that system just as much as I question the offensive system. Now, maybe that defensive system will work once you have the personnel too, but it's they're both issues. Both sides of that are issues. So they need to eventually gather personnel. They don't just need a D'Angelo Russell. They need a rim defender. They need perimeter defenders. They need a lot of different things. And that's what I think that's the biggest thing I've learned this season is that Carl can be very good, but he is not a top 3-5 player in the league who's just going to carry you. Because I mean,
right?
He's last 14 games he's played, man, they've lost.
Yeah, seeing that leads me to the next question I was going to have about all of this is that at the end of the day, we look at Cat and Cat's putting up the numbers, and he's an efficient offensive player, and you can't knock that, and you can't hold that against him because he's terrific at that. But I just wonder if there is something that is missing from him that can elevate this team, even though they are very, very flat. And I'm not saying Cat needs to drag them to the playoffs and take them to the Western Conference Finals, but like you just said, they've lost 14 straight games with him in the lineup. And for as good as he is, it's just... It's mind-boggling to me.
There absolutely is something missing to Cat's game. And, you know, it's the defensive side of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, period. Like, we're at a point where... So every year of his career, for the season, the defense has been better with him on the bench than it was with him on the floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's holes and stuff to poke in that. And it's different systems coached. I mean, from Sam to Tibbs to now Ryan, you know, it's all been, you know, clouded to some degree. But we're at this point where this season it's as egregious as ever. And since Thanksgiving, they're not just 0-14. When he's on the floor, when he's played since Thanksgiving, they're getting out. Their defense is giving up 18 more points per 100 possessions than when he's off.
Oh, goodness gracious.
And that, I mean, for people don't know, I mean, like, that's like a fake number. Like that's so big. Like their defensive rating with him on the floor is worse, like substantially worse than the Cleveland Cavs, who are the worst defense in the league.
Yeah.
And then when he's been off the floor, it's like a solid. It's like a top 5-10 defense. It's like a 105 defensive rating, which is a very good.
It's a defensive rating that you should be able to win with.
For sure. I mean, and now. Do I think that's a fair representation? Probably not. The defense kind of got rolling when he was out for a little bit. I don't think exclusively because he was out.
Right.
But my broader point is, I think it's very fair to say that a lot of the defensive issues fall on Cat. And particularly given the system that they're running. This system is more reliant on the backline defender than other systems previously have.
Mm-hmm.
They want to defend ball screen actions with two players. And when you're doing that, that puts a massive impetus on the five or the man, the big man defending the screen.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that help, that third player coming in to help, that center has to be nearly perfect.
And he needs to be Rudy Gobert.
Those are the I mean, you talk about a drop scheme.
Yep.
The guys who are doing that around the league, you have Rudy Gobert. You have Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, largely, it's the big guys who are dropping back and defending the rim.
Yeah.
And they could do that because they're bigger than Cat. And they have a better basketball IQ on the defensive end than Cat. Cat gets burned in those situations so much more than those guys do. So for me personally, I question the offensive stuff seems egregious because they're third in the league in attempts and 29th in the league in makes, it percentage-wise.
Yeah.
I could see that working eventually with the personnel. I don't know if I can see this scheme working defensively with Cat playing the role he's currently playing. I don't know. We got to see once other guys come, but I actually have more faith in the offensive system than I do the defensive side.
So, I mean, Cat basically, does he need to just be a four and have a stronger defensive? I mean, obviously you can't just trade for Rudy Gobert, but... Does Cat need to shift over to being a four, and
you know,
the Wolves need to aim to try and find a poor man's Rudy Gobert to play next to him?
I think it would be worth looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, they clearly don't think so. They're smarter than I am. Like, they're not. They haven't even tried it. Never. They never try that.
Yeah.
But when I think about the trade deadline, what I've written about, talked about before, is like something like if you were able to bring in a Nerlens Noel, and even and Noel's on an expiring contract, whatever. Like, it gives you that traditional shot blocking rim defender, and you try it out for these last 40 games. You see, you know, what does Carl look like in that four position, scrambling out on the perimeter a little bit more, switching a little bit? Like, mm-hmm. what would that look like? I don't know. Maybe it's worse. Maybe it's worse. But what I do know is we've never seen it before.
Right.
And what we have seen does not work. It has never worked. This is year five. Every single year, the defense has been bad. And it's been worse when Carl's on the floor. So they're not going to do that. They're all in on this plan and this system. But to me, that's a very fair thing to question of, is he of the caliber of defensive center that you can win with? I don't know. Numbers certainly say no.
Can he be a number one on a winning team? I mean, forget about championships and stuff like that. But can he be a true number one, a true alpha on a team that gets to the playoffs and makes some noise? Because I'm struggling with that right now.
He's a fascinating character because the answer to that question pertains to mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability, which is a hard thing. The ability to lead is hard.
Yeah, and like, it's rare.
And it's rare.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – every team has a number one just by default.
Right.
But, like, a true number one is not only the best player, it's the best leader. It's the most impactful when they're on the floor. Carl – granted, he's only 24, has not proven to be that
right.
in any year of his career. He certainly has the talent of a number one. I mean, I know from conversations I've had, that's what the question is can he turn that page to being immensely impactful to the players who are around him? And the answer thus far has been no. Then that leads me to Andrew, where I go, all right, I don't know how much Cat helps Andrew,
mm-hmm.
you know, but is that Cat? Or is that Andrew not wanting to be helped because he thinks he's the number one in his own head, you know? Or his play suggests that. So, I mean, which kind of brings back to the whole thing we're talking about the trade deadline is like, I think we got to see different things.
Yeah.
I think we need new data points. Carl's played every game of his career with Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, broadly. And it doesn't look like in those games that he really elevates the second best player on the team, Andrew.
Right.
And I don't know. Again, I keep saying that it clouds the picture for me where all we're really left with is like guesses of what we think will work.
Mm-hmm.
We can't totally go off of what has or hasn't. And I don't know. I mean, time's ticking. We gotta know those things.
Yeah, because the my thing is I don't want to make this seem like we're blaming Carl Anthony Towns for this team being 15-32. Like, it's all on Cat, and it's Cat's fault.
Everything is
his fault. And I think there's sort of this narrative kind of being thrown out there that, like, because mm-hmm. we've been talking about it all week just on shows and everything, and there's, like, this narrative out there, like, we're just putting everything on Cat, and it's all Cat's fault. Carl Anthony Towns is not a problem. I don't view him as a problem with this franchise. I like Cat. I want Cat to be a major part of this team having success.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I, as an observer, get tired of looking at Shabazz Napier just sort of being the player that he is and blaming him and just saying, well, mm-hmm. Shabazz just isn't good enough. And, you know, Cat just doesn't have enough players around him. That's clear. And we know that. But there's just like these other things like what you just talked about that I just wish that Cat had, because I feel like if he had those things, I would feel better about where this team is going.
We want it
right
to work.
Now. Yeah.
We want it to work. And it seems like something that theoretically could work. I mean, we're all a few small adjustments away from making our lives work, right? Like,
right.
And he's a few small adjustments away from making his basketball game work. Like, that's just the reality of this situation. He is not a superstar. He could be, but it only comes with serious commitment to adjustments to his game to make him go from very, very good to very, very great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what number ones are. I mean, you know, whatever. Define it how you want. That's how I'm defining it. Like,
you can count those guys on one hand, basically,
right.
around the league right now. So, it's the LeBrons, it's the KDs, it's the Kawhis.
Mm-hmm.
That field.
Like, we would have if we were covering the Brooklyn Nets, we'd be having a similar type of conversation about Kyrie,
yep.
who is a very, very good player, but mm-hmm. it's not proven to be a very, very great player because independently, he has not found a way to elevate the group.
Right.
And that's the same. That's the same wall Cat's running into. Now it's about, and this is where the coaching staff in the front office comes in. It's about putting in the infrastructure that allows him to show you if he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that very slowly. They put together the construct, the outlines of what it looks like. Now they need to add the color, which is, the personnel, right?
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's not us questioning Karl Anthony Towns like the person or the basketball player necessarily.
Certainly not.
We're questioning, does this construct fit perfectly around him? Or what, mm-hmm. what does he need to do to expand to fill up everything he needs to fill up within that construct? Because they have put it together without the color, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much not working. So what's next? What is next? And the trade deadline probably isn't going to be super meaningful.
Right.
It's going to be most likely be stuff on the margins. This summer, it kind of will probably be more of that. I mean, maybe a little bit more movement. Next deadline, too. So I think it's going to be a while. I think 2021 is like the year.
Mm-hmm.
That you got some money falling off the books. You got a lot of good free agents out there, a real chance to make a move. In that time, we're talking about 18 more months. Yeah. If I'm right there, if that's the year, we're talking about a season and a half where he needs to figure it out before the other guy comes. Because I don't think the other guys, because it's not just, you just right. get D'Angelo Russell, you're not good.
Right. Like, no, it's not enough.
No, it's not. Like, he needs to become everything he possibly can in that time, and then the pieces get added around him, because you can't just win a championship with one guy. You can't go to the Western Conference Finals with just one guy. Like
right.
you gotta.
This is a star driven league.
Absolutely, multiple stars. I mean, it's league stacked, and
This conference in itself is stacked.
But getting away from the big picture, I think we can hold them accountable for the micro, the what's happening right now. I mean, the Memphis Grizzlies are the eighth seed.
Yeah.
The Memphis Grizzlies, who are younger.
With a rookie as the catalyst right now for what
they're
doing.
And Jaren Jackson Jr., who's a second-year player. So yep. What is that, 20 and 21, 19 and 20, something like that? I mean, that mm-hmm. is.
That's the biggest thing, Dane, that I'm having trouble with just this season as a whole,
mm-hmm.
is seeing the Memphis Grizzlies, who I thought were going to lose 55-plus games this year.
Sure.
Like, I thought they were going to be terrible. I love John Morant. I loved watching him at the little bit I saw out of him in college. And I thought he would be good coming into the NBA. But I did not expect this team for us to be more than halfway through the season in terms
way
of games played and to be for them to be sitting right in the middle of the playoff mix.
Yep.
I did not see that at all.
And I think it's because, to compare and contrast, the Timberwolves are trying to put together a systematic blueprint
mm-hmm.
and create an identity. The Grizzlies are just trying to create an identity. And I don't think they handicap themselves in ways of limiting their personnel. I mm-hmm. feel like they're going out trying to win every single game and maximize it. And you see that by them playing guys like Jonas Valanciunas. Is he on the next great Grizzlies team? No. Jay Crowder? No. I mean, there's plenty of things that they're doing that are both now and later mm-hmm. centric. And that, to me, if you want to question this regime, the Timberwolves regime, is you look at that and you ask, okay, did this process have to be so black and white?
Mm-hmm.
Could have it progressed more linearly? The comparison to make is the Philadelphia 76ers. That's what they did. They went black and white, and they said, "Build. We're doing the Every single move is about the future, and it's about maximizing every single move.
Yeah.
And winning be damned, you know?
But the problem is the Wolves, when you factor in where Cat is at in his career, the Wolves are kind of in
That's
a different spot.
And the fan base. And those are the two things. Those are the two things I draw. Because what the Sixers did was smart.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing was logical and maximizing.
But they were coming off of when Sam Hinkie came in mm-hmm. and started the quote unquote process, they were coming off a season in which they took the Boston Celtics to game 7 in the second round as an 8 seed
mm-hmm.
with Andre Iguodala and Drew Holiday and that whole group. And they broke that group up and they tore it down and started all over. But that fan base in Philadelphia was not as
downtrodden,
jaded. I don't know, whatever. You know what I mean? So it's. And then on top of that, you have Karl Anthony Towns, granted, 5-year contract, first year of the new deal, but the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking. And obviously, from what we've seen from him this week, he's not happy, or at least he's not thrilled about the fact that they're on their second double-digit losing streak in 2 months.
What I keep going back to is Media Day, you know, which is always a great time to take the temperature of everything.
Yeah.
And when Rosas took the stage and when Saunders took the stage, they defined the season as progressing if they developed. If they developed every day, if they developed over the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Cat hit the stage, and when he was asked how he's measuring this season, he said wins and losses. So now you have conflicting perspectives there and narratives. And I think that's playing out on a macro scale where Karl Anthony Towns gets the system, but he, and I don't blame him. Like, he's 24. He's like entering his prime. He wants it
fifth
now.
Year in the league.
He wants it now.
Yeah.
And
because he's already gone through the losing and the bad seasons. And
right.
He had the one taste of the playoffs, and you know, you get that one taste of the playoffs.
Right.
You don't perform well.
Not at
you
all.
Struggle the way he did.
Yep.
He wants to get back there and redeem himself, probably.
And I don't blame him for any of that.
Sure.
I don't blame him for thinking any of that. That seems fair. And it also seems fair that Saunders and Rosas want to pursue the path they're going on.
Right.
It's just as times, I mean, they started off a distance away from each other and what their beliefs were from the season. And as time goes on, they're moving further apart.
Yeah.
Because Rosas, in many ways, is pleased with what is happening. I mean, he doesn't want it. Obviously, he, you know, is upset about the game the other night and a lot of the developments over the course of the year. But he has gotten this roster. Him and Saunders have gotten this roster to buy in pretty much completely to the system, to what they're doing. And he looks at it and he goes, this looks a lot like Houston. This looks a lot like Brooklyn. And those are the teams we're mirroring our plan towards, because we want to be like them. And Carl hears that and knows that and sees that's logical, but it creates this tension because he looks dumb for calling out Kendrick Perkins. The team, since he snapped at Kendrick Perkins on Twitter, his team's 12-32.
Mm.
Like, I mean, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. And so I just put myself in his shoes. It would be hard. It would be hard because you're dealing with personal pride, which is important, and you're dealing with logic. And those things are just, like I said, there's just a tension that conflicts between those two things.
Yeah, and then you go back to the scuffle with Embiid, too, in Philadelphia, where, you know, there was thought.
Yeah.
There was this thought that, okay, Kat, he's showing this toughness because he's standing up to Embiid, and this is going to springboard them. And then it just.
They weren't ready to be springboarded, though.
Right.
He was. Towns was ready to be springboarded. He's like, I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm ready to be one of the best players in the league. The guys around him were not, given that they didn't fit the system that his team's trying to play. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's all. Carl, I would understand his unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't going well. It isn't going well for what he wants to have transpired. And that's. I mean, it's not a crisis, but it's the issue they face right now is, you know, figuring that out. Will Will La Rosa's regime relent on a strict abidement to the process? Will Ryan relent on a strict roster construct in the name of, you know, goodwill? Mm-hmm. Like, getting some wins? I don't know. It's stupid because the whole... They're also incentivized to lose games, too.
Sure.
Because then you get a better pick and all that. So,
but I also don't know how good this draft is, though. That's the other scary part.
Yeah, and that's... I mean, people who know a lot more than I do about that.
I haven't watched enough college basketball this year to really know. But
my take on that whole draft thing is... All right, we're in the media business. Narratives, once they start rolling, turn into facts.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things where this happens all the time, where we go, oh yeah, remember the 2020 draft? The whole year we talked about how it was trash.
And then now this guy, and this guy is really good. Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. The draft is too inexact of a science for me to be like, let's demerit it in this year in some sort of way. I mean, I don't know, like the worst draft in the past decade was the Anthony Bennett draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bennett went number one. You know what went number two? Victor Oladipo. You know what went number 15? Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Well, the Kyrie draft where the Wolves took Derek Williams number two overall I mean, I'm sorry to like throw salt on a wound here, but yeah, I mean, there was sort of that, I think going into that draft, it was Kyrie Irving, Derek Williams, and everybody else was just like,
you just
it's
don't
okay.
know, man. We don't know.
And then you get Klay Thompson and Kawhi Leonard out of that same draft.
Yeah, boom. Yeah. Like, you don't know.
Right.
So, all that said, the draft is inherently a gamble that I think might have a higher upside payment possible to it than what we've come to collectively agree that it is at.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I know on my podcast, me and Britt Robson argue about this all the time, where he's like, I think that's the path for this team is you go out into the draft, you get that playmaking guard in the draft, they're cost controlled, they're cheap, they're young, you know, and he's saying, you know, you hope you strike Ja Morant, right?
Yeah.
I'm concerned about that ideology going forward for this Timberwolves team, because what if you think you're getting Ja Morant, you get Darius Garland
mm-hmm.
or Jarrett Culver, you know, like, I feel like there's too much on the line to gamble your future on the unknown.
Yeah. It's hard to predict what exactly they need to do, but whatever it is, it's got to be right. It has to be. It is imperative for it to be right.
I mean, let's call it what it is. Like, if they mess this up, not even if they mess this up. If this doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
if this cat window doesn't work, and they're eventually forced to trade him, and I know everybody thinks if they have to trade him, they're getting back Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and five first and two pick swaps and all that, like the Thunder did for Paul George. That probably isn't happening because they got that for Paul George and Kawhi.
Mm-hmm.
If they mess this up and they get back an Al Jefferson-type package like they got for KG back in the day, we're talking about this literally blowing up.
Yeah.
Like literally blowing up and potentially in a doomsday scenario causing this franchise to implode. Yeah. I don't think that's an unfair worst case scenario to paint. I don't think that's out of the question. This is a critical time.
Mm-hmm.
A critical next not the trade deadline. Like you don't got to nail the trade deadline. You don't got to stabilize it all now.
It's just like the totality of everything that transpires over the next 2 years
is
whatever
critical.
18 months, yeah.
Is critical for Timberwolves fans who want to see this team stay in Minnesota and eventually become a winner. It's critical. They can't afford another big mess up. And that's all that's ever happened here. I believe, personally, I think they got really smart people in that front office.
Yeah.
And I think they got a heck of a talent in Carl. I think it could certainly work out. But like anything, there's all these variables that are out of your control. Injuries, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That could, you know, that could make this really hard. And they cannot afford to mess this up.
Does there need to be a little bit of give and take from both sides? Like if you're thinking, okay, Gerson and Ryan, and then Kat, does there need to just sort of be like this?
That's the argument.
Give and take between both sides here? Like, It feels like you're saying, like, they're just so apart right now that it just feels like both sides have to just sort of.
I don't think they're so apart. I think they're apart in a way that makes sense. Like, it makes sense. Like, I don't know. It needs to use their term, align better.
Yeah.
Next year.
That makes sense.
On the floor. And I think it totally could. I think it totally could. They have the smart people to make the moves necessary to really, I mean, I promise you they got the ball of yarn up in the office. If this, then that, then this. If not this, then that. Like, they're going to play. They've played through every single one of those scenarios. Everyone talks about the cap situation being all awful. Kind of true.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually it's going to get better. Like, in a year, I'm going to talk about 2021. It's not going to be as bad. I mean, you're going to have Carl, who is a bargain, even at his max number. You'll have Andrew, who could either progress or his contract would be less onerous because it would only be for 2 years. You can move on from that.
Yep.
There is a path to having money to get guys around Carl. And they also have they have assets. They have all their picks. They could become very aggressive. They could believe what I believe, that, you know, the draft's kind of a gamble. Let's use these draft assets to go get somebody.
You got to start
that is better,
on everything.
Which is more of a known. And then, I mean, like, they're not great assets, but like Jarrett Culver something, Josh Okogie something. And I mean an asset, and like they could develop into something. Or they could be, you know, traded into something else. I mean, that's the thing. That's what Rosas is trying to do. They're trying to pile up that asset pot to make a move to get the right things around Carl. And we're also concerned about that because I think so many people are like, I don't see D'Angelo Russell and Cat working. And it seems like that's what they're going for. They are going for that, but they're going for other things too.
Mm-hmm.
They're going.
We just keep hearing about D'Angelo Russell.
I promise you, there's a ton of irons in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like some are in the beginning of the fire, which are this deadline or this offseason. This team will be extremely active in reconstructing its roster every trade season with the deadline, the offseason, the next deadline. I mean, it will be. We're going to have no shortage of stuff to talk about every single time there, because they're going to make a bunch of trades. They're going to make a bunch of signings because they know, just as we do, that what they have on this roster right now will not work. It will not work. You need to make massive changes to get to a place where things work. And unfortunately, which Timberwolves fans don't want to hear, that requires the P word, patience.
Patience, yeah.
And
it's a big gamble because this fan base, man, has been. I mean, you and I, we're both native Minnesotans, and we've been watching this franchise our whole lives. And I would imagine we both want to see this franchise do well.
For sure.
It's a struggle, man.
I tell the story all the time. I'm a Chicago Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, as a kid, WGN, I watched it. I watched them like crazy. They stunk. They're terrible. I got older, started working, and like basketball became more of an interest, and, you know, the Cubs kind of fell off by the wayside for me.
Yeah.
And I wasn't watching all the games on WGN anymore. And then the Cubs got good and they won the World Series. I went to the World Series and it was cool. But I remember sitting there and thinking, you know what? I wasn't here the past 5 years. And that makes this less cool. Mm-hmm. It was super cool. I mean, there's still my Cubs, like, they won it all. But if this does ever work, the people who are listening to this radio show right now, who care about thinking about this whole process and about Carl Anthony Towns and all that, if it ever works, it will be so much more enjoyable than hopping on the bandwagon once things start rolling. That was my experience with the Cubs, at least.
Sure.
And I just think that's real. I just think that's real, that if this works, man, it will be so special because it was so bad.
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, before we get out of here, we have to talk about Kobe Bryant, obviously. Man, what a week. I was not a fan of Kobe Bryant, per se. Always respected the player, though, and the the heart and the fire and the determination that he played with, the Mamba mentality, killer instinct, and everything. Hated watching the Lakers win because, like, I always, sure. like, that was part of my basketball fandom was cheering against the Lakers.
For
I
sure.
was, the first year they won when they beat Indiana in the finals, I was kind of happy for them. I was more so happy for Shaq because I still loved Shaq and sure. everything. But then when they sort of progressed through that three-peat, you know, it just sort of got a little bit tiresome of just sort of watching them win and dominate the league and everything. But, man, I just, the Kobe thing just sort of, it hit home for me because I think about just all the things that he's sort of done in his post-playing career and the relationship with his daughter who, you know, I mean, that just added an extra gut punch with her being on that helicopter and the other seven people as well. And so it's just been tough to just sort of process. It's taken me like a couple of days to really like process the fact that this like happened and that it's real. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it.
It's to process emotions, space is often a good thing, right?
Yeah.
To be able to get your own space and be able to process what's ever going on in your head. And what I think has been really difficult in this time is it's been kind of impossible to escape.
Yeah.
For me, it was like Monday being at Target Center, you know, around the players and around all of it was like, it was really uncomfortable because I didn't have it processed. I didn't know if like me feeling sad about it was right or what. I mean, I didn't, I'm like you, I wasn't like a Kobe fan, but he had a profound effect on me because he had a profound effect on basketball.
Yeah.
And so much of my life, professional life now is basketball. And so much of my, you know, childhood life was basketball. My social life is basketball. You know, friends I played with, or just conversations I have about, I mean, that's my job. You know, have conversations mm-hmm. about basketball. I've done that forever with, you know, the Kobe versus LeBron arguments and all that sort of thing. I mean, he was such a connector to basketball for me that it made it really profound to lose that, you know, to understand that he was so important in that part of my life that I love. That it, you know, it was a grieving process for me, and it was uncomfortable for me to not be able to take space and figure out how I felt about it, because it's all over. You can't scroll through your Twitter without watching six super emotional, you know, personal experiences of Jerry West or Shaq or you know, whoever it might be.
That was gut wrenching to watch.
Absolutely gut wrenching.
It was great.
It was great.
It was so like tough.
I just felt like overexposed to it and it like almost addicted to it.
Yeah.
Where I couldn't not watch it. I couldn't not read about it. And it's just that has all led to, you know, me struggling to process what happened and to now have felt that this week was just exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like weak for saying because like, I mean, come on, it's like I didn't have a personal relationship with Kobe at all. I never touched or spoke or any, I mean, was never in the vicinity even of him. But doesn't mean that's not true. Doesn't mean I don't feel gassed from this week and from, you know, I don't know if this is the case for you, but like I had a bunch of like phone calls or text conversations about guys I played basketball with or my basketball friends. And just all of that, every single one of those inspired a sort of like, it was a emotional experience. And, you know, you end the phone call, you end the text conversation, like, I love you, man.
Yeah.
And you set down your phone and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, somebody else is calling you or texting you.
My dad texted me. This was Sunday, probably. I'd have to look back at my phone as to when exactly it was, but it was probably about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon mm-hmm. on Sunday. So the news had been out there for about a couple hours. And my dad, you know, and my dad, who's a huge Laker fan, loved Kobe.
Oh, all right. I don't know.
And
that.
Like the first thing he texted me was, I love you, son. And I obviously, like, I knew exactly why he was, you know, because he said that to me before, obviously, numerous times.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm his kid, for goodness sakes. But like that, I knew exactly in that moment, obviously, why he was texting me. And then, because most of the time when he tells me, I love you, son, it's after we've talked or had text exchanges for a long time. But this was just first thing that he said to me that day was in a text, I love you, son. And I knew exactly, obviously, why he was doing it. And it just, that's when it just takes everything. It is truly amazing how, and in some ways frustrating, how something like that can sort of put a whole, can just sort of put things into perspective on how, you know, just make sure that you do show that for the people that you really care about. Because Kobe Bryant and Gianna, they woke up, and those other seven people that were on that helicopter, they woke up that morning, and it was just going to be a normal Sunday for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't come home. And it just really puts things into perspective. And then to, like, see all of that, and the crazy thing about Sunday was, like, I think it showed the really good side of social media, but it also showed an ugly side of social media, unfortunately. Won't get into that too much, but I think just as the week sort of progressed, it just, and to see just, like, all of the, because that was the other tough part of this, is you see all of these other people who had more of a direct connection to Kobe, who we only know as basketball players, Jerry West, Shaq, and D. Wade, and we watched that whole thing, you know, Rick Fox, and you sort of see people that you haven't, you got to see a side of those guys that we really hadn't seen, and it was tough to take, because you don't think about
it brought out all the human.
The idea of seeing Shaquille O'Neal cry, it just was, for the longest time, was unfathomable to me. You know, and I know he's a human being, but you hadn't seen it, and then to actually see it was just, it was powerful, man. It really was.
The TNT thing was not to quantify the stuff, but for me, that was just like the most powerful, the most just like, I'm sunk into my seat watching this. Because what they were talking about was obviously Kobe, but they were talking about the human part of it.
Yeah.
And for me, what I was struggling with was the human part of my own selfish world of that had been the human stuff, the daughter, the family, all of that is what I had been wrestling with more than losing the basketball player that we all looked up to.
Right.
There was both, but to see the people we know for talking about basketball or for playing basketball to be talking about the human stuff, and for that to strike a chord, made it all stick.
Yeah.
And I think it was excellent. I think Ernie Johnson did a terrific job.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a delicate line to touch in all of this with when you're talking about family and friends and faith.
Yeah.
But they're all important, you know, to bring up. And if anything, the lasting impact of this should be that it helps us all to grow in our relationships with our family, our relationships with our friends, and our relationships with our own faith.
Yeah.
And we've all experienced death, you know, close to us to, you know, to different degrees. And in every experience I've had, it takes time, but every time there has always been a silver lining, you know, that comes from it. And I believe that if we're intentional about this, every person, that you can make that happen. That you can, you know, squeeze your brother, your daughter, your son a little bit tighter, and you can, you can make this matter. You can make this positively impactful.
Yeah.
And change your life.
Very well said, my friend.
Thank you.
Awesome. That will do it for this edition of Raised by Wolves. You can find this podcast, of course, on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. And, of course, you can find it at scorenorth.com and the Score North mobile app. Give us a rating. Let us know what you think if you're finding us on Apple. And for Dane Moore and all of us here at Score North, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week on Raised by Wolves.